everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John, engineering and producing the show. It's Tuesday, August 2nd, 2022. In our 12th year now on the radio, the Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio on 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. and KVOI.com. The Buckmaster Show Live Line is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Normally we do Shelley Fishman right at 12:15. We're going to go with Shell today at the top of the show. John, are we going to play the disclaimer right now?
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
And here he is, Shelley Fishman. Normally, Shell, as you know, we're usually quarter past the hour today. Normally we have Terry Bracey with us on the live line. We're having some phone issues. It can happen. That's why I'm glad you're right with me in the studio.
It's Tuesday,
it's
Bill.
It's Tuesday. What else can happen? Of course something is going to happen. Like the market is off to bad start.
So we had this really great July.
Yeah.
In fact, probably the best July the market has seen in 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's August.
Yep. And market reacting a little bit to the Pelosi visit. There was questions whether she was going to stop in Taiwan. And she did.
And she did. So I'm going to be really curious to hear what our friend says at 12:15.
Yeah, hope we get him at 12:15.
The Pelosi visit. That's out of my area of expertise. I've got opinions, but no expertise there. So,
Shelley, we had some numbers Friday, and we've talked a lot about two quarters in a row. Is that equal, or does that equal recession time?
It depends on to whom you speak.
Mm-hmm.
Traditionally, that's been the simple explanation. However, it is not the explanation that the National Bureau of Economic Research uses for when we're in a recession. They take a look at two quarters of negative growth, but they also take a look at other factors within the economy that they use to try to determine whether or not things are really that bad. And in this case, they believe that things are not that bad, and I certainly agree with them. We have a very good employment number. We have a very good number of the pace of jobs growth has been really outstanding. In fact, record-breaking. We've got two jobs open for every job seeker. There's plenty of cash in the economy. The Fed's working hard. You know, some say they came a little late to the game in fighting inflation, and I say now they've overreacted a little bit. But certainly there's no lack of attempts right now to deal with both a soft landing for the economy and a way to relieve the pressure that people are feeling from some, especially in certain segments of the economy, unusually high increases in prices.
Last week, you pointed out that who makes the official designation on the call, whether we're in a recession. I think it's worth repeating. And how long do they take before they make that decision?
Well, that's a really interesting question. It's the National Bureau of Economic Research, the NBER. And they can sometimes take 6, 8, 10 months. They like to see a lot of data before they declare that we are in or have been in a recession. And in some cases, they look after 1 month and declare a recession. For instance, in 2020, the NBER declared a recession almost immediately after the start of the pandemic. Now, it turned out we did have two negative months, but they didn't know it when they declared the recession. And what drove them to declare that recession right away was the unemployment rate went up to like 16% instantly.
Wow.
And so that you know, caused them to look at this and say, well, we're clearly in a recession. In 2008, we had 2 months of negative growth, and they didn't declare that recession. The Democrats declared the recession and called it the second Bush recession, but the NBER didn't really declare it for several months until they could see really what the effects of the housing crisis were doing on the rest of the economy.
What is it? The columnist Lionheart said he had a really good column. Well, what do we do now? How do we go forward?
So Dave Lionheart was the bureau chief for the New York Times in Washington for years.
Yeah, I thought he was.
And now he doesn't even write a regular column for the Times anymore. He just, you know, sticks his nose under the blanket every couple of weeks and writes what I think to be a series of some of the most intelligent and well-thought-out op-eds that you can imagine. I mean, he's a senior guy, and he knows what he's talking about. On the 29th, he talked about big economic questions, and what he said was, look, it's very important that we understand that the economy is teetering on the brink, and we have to take this stuff seriously. However, we're not in a recession right now. It hasn't been declared a recession. The more important question, as you mentioned, Bill, is where is the economy headed from here? And what indications do we have that things will either get better, stay the same, or go downhill? And so that's what he writes about in this piece. It's called Big Economic Question, and it's available online on the New York Times from the 29th. It's an easy read. It's well worth the time you spend with it.
So, the equity markets just had the best month in, well, it's been really a couple of years.
It's been 20.
Yeah, 20 years. 20 years. So, I mean, we needed that good news for sure.
Yeah, it was the best July, not the best
July.
Month, the best July. So what happened is we briefly touched bear market territory in the Dow and the S&P 500 indices. And when I say briefly, for one day.
Mm-hmm.
And then things improved just past the 20% mark. So the next day at close, we were only about 18 or 19% down for the year. That said, the markets have been distressed since almost the beginning of January. And whether we're at 21% or 15%, if you look at your portfolio reports on a more than six-month basis, there's some alarming news there. And so what we have to do is we have to take a look at not only what has caused the downturn in the markets, but whether we think that investors are going to continue to build into the price of stocks a negative outlook for the economy. That turns out to be, as so many things in economics do, a question of whom you ask. So most economists right now will say we're not in a recession. They'll say that the stock market has bottomed out and we appear to be, coming back out of it. Whether or not we come all the way out of it this year and actually turn positive the year, I believe we will, but it's not going to be, much more than 2 or 3%. But what really determines the future is so often, Bill, the human factor. In other words, recessions and inflation can often become self-fulfilling prophecies. If people start panicking and hoarding money and stop their spending or change significantly their spending patterns, then that can push an economy that might not ordinarily go into recession into one. So Lionheart spent some time discussing the human issues in what a recession is and how it can become worse than perhaps it might have if people just didn't change their behavior, or if people who had a stake in a negative outcome stopped screaming about it. I mean, one of the things, and, you know, I don't want to get into politics too badly, but clearly it would be to the Republicans' advantage if lots of voters felt that the economy were in the tank.
All right, let's do this. We're still having phone issues. Hopefully we'll be able to get that with Shelley, I mean with Terry Bracey, but John's kind of shaking his head there. I don't know what the heck has happened, but anyway, we'll keep trying with Terry, and luckily Shelley is with me in studio, and we do have a 12:30 interview in studio, so try to mitigate the damage here. But let's take the break, and looks like, Shelley, we're going to talk some more.
Sounds good to me.
Take a break.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
It is the Buckmaster Show. We get a double dose of Shelley Fishman today. Unfortunately, we're having some phone issues that apparently will not be resolved during the show. So Terry, I am sorry. We'll get you next month. But Shelley, anyway, the inflation thing, we're not hearing as much about inflation as we were and its impact.
Well, the problem with inflation, of course, is that it's in the eye of the beholder very often. The statistics that came out last week on inflation were dreadful. That inflation is kind of broadening the scope of the pieces of the economy that are inflated, even though inflation is dropping in some of the things that had been the worst affected. So, for instance, the cost of gasoline has come down significantly. The cost of housing is coming down. And we're seeing some reductions in the cost of certain food products. However, certain other things like rents and the cost of meat and the cost of certain things that are tied up in the supply chain issues and also in the war in Ukraine, those are persisting. So what the Fed is trying to do is traditionally they raise interest rates, short-term interest rates, when they fear that inflation is here or coming. And since they got to this a little bit late, the rates have not been gradual. The last two periods, they have raised those rates 0.75%. Now, you scratch your head and go, wait a second, we're trying to fight price increases, but you're going to raise the price of money. How isn't that just more inflation?
Right.
And, well, you know, it is. But it's inflation in the financial segments, in the financial sector of the economy, which means that borrowing money becomes more expensive. And to the extent that when money becomes more expensive, people tend to have less of it, that reduces their ability to spend. And so, therefore, it reduces demand, and as a result of that, inflation is driven down. Now, at the same time, you're reducing the money supply in the economy. And this is a little wonkish, Bill, but stick with me for a second. You are also reducing the propensity of businesses to continue their expansion and the propensity of businesses to want to spend money themselves, because businesses most often are working on some percentage of borrowed money. And when they do that, what they will do in projecting their businesses going forward is to say, well, we don't need as many people as we have on the payroll now. And so they either reduce hiring or they will actually do layoffs. And so what always, always characterizes a recession is that the unemployment rate goes up. We haven't seen any of that so far. But if the Fed gets this wrong, what you will see is that the replacement for high inflation becomes higher unemployment. And, you know, it depends. If you're out there and you're enjoying the fact that you're not paying as much for, you know, chopped meat, but you're unemployed, you kind of shake your head in dismay.
How about the deficit? How does that play into this?
Great question. So we've had high deficits in the economy now for 30 years. And we've had very, very low inflation for 30 years. So empirically, based upon, in other words, what you see and experience, you would think that we would have decoupled the idea of deficit spending and deficits and the idea of inflation. Depends on who you talk to, again. So Republicans are staunchly in the 1930s mindset that says deficit spending will cause inflation, period, end of story, stop the deficit spending, or at least reduce it significantly. And so, and now I'm stepping into Terry's territory a tiny bit.
Yeah.
You've got what was, a, you know, parts of the Build Back Better program in the current administration, and part of what they're doing is aimed at that Republican argument that says, well, let's call it a traditional argument, that says that if you reduce deficit spending, you will reduce the inflationary pressures on the economy. And in fact, the current bill that is being talked about as being rushed through Congress now has $300 or $400 billion with a B dollars of deficit spending reduction over a decade. Now, keep in mind, we've got, we were at the $700 or $800 billion deficit a year mark. We're now at around $1 trillion a year. So getting that number back down to $600 or $700 billion a year deficits is being considered a victory somehow.
Inflation is killing us, so says listener Richard. 70%, Richard says, of Americans live paycheck to paycheck. Gas has not come down except maybe only 5%. Did the Democrats and President Biden overjuice the economy?
No. No, the inflation is not a function of overjuicing the economy that you can really point to and say, this is what did it. What overjuiced the economy overjuiced demand in the economy was the fact that as a function of demand-supply balance, the war in Ukraine and the supply chain problems really made demand pressure available supply. To the extent that we were putting stimulus in the economy to help people who had lost their incomes, you could say that created more demand than there would have been. But quite frankly, that kept people, above water. So people who were living paycheck to paycheck, when their paycheck stopped, getting a $1,200 check was a lot of help. Now, in retrospect, there have been some economists who said we probably did a little bit too much of that. But I don't think that was the reason for this kind of inflation. The reasons for this kind of inflation were largely pandemic-related.
Okay. So getting back to what you said in the first segment, this is actually, you're still optimistic about the year turning out pretty good.
Yeah. So when we take a look at, again, the NBER, the National Bureau of Economic Research, and the numbers that they have crunched for the first quarter and now the beginning numbers for the second quarter, I say beginning because they're always going to be revised. What we see is there's two measures in the economy that they look at. One is the GDP, or gross domestic product. That's been negative for the first two quarters, about 1.2% negative in the first quarter, about 0.9 negative in the second quarter. But there's also something called a gross domestic income, and that has been positive in both quarters. So if those numbers overcome each other, or if you average the two numbers together, you'd actually have a positive second quarter and an only very slightly negative first quarter. So it is this backward-looking nature of how recessions are kind of categorized as recessions that's kind of a little bit annoying and somewhat confusing, because you'd say, well, you ought to know when you're in a recession. But when you've got employment numbers the way we have and cash in the economy the way we have, you don't have a recession. Now, your caller was absolutely right in saying for those people who are affected by inflation, it's horrible, and it is horrible. But first of all, the fuel number is down almost 50% or 60%. In the high fuel areas of the country, it's down 70%.
Wow.
Now, it's still up from a year ago, but that pressure is off of people. But let's just agree to say that inflation is a horrible thing, that if you are a person who is living from paycheck to paycheck and therefore have to make sacrifices about what you might buy and what you might stop having to buy because you just can't afford it, that is not a good situation. And that's why the Fed is doing what they're doing. That's why the administration is trying to do, you know, and do more. I wish the administration would do even more. For instance, if we were to reverse the Trump tariffs, we'd get immediate price cuts in certain things that would affect the rate of inflation almost instantly. But there's politics behind that. So I agree with your caller that if you're living paycheck to paycheck and you're having to make sacrifices because of the price of things going up, it is a really uncomfortable situation. But economists look at things in the macro sense, not in the average sense, or rather in the average sense, not in the individual sense. When you look at it that way, if you take a look at wage increases, on balance have been about 5.5% this year. Inflation so far this year, it's in the 9% range. The difference between the increase in wages and inflation is about 3.5-4%. That's survivable unless you're one of those people who is having trouble with it.
Good job, Shelley. Thanks for doing double duty today. Our apologies to Terry Bracey because our phone lines are down. But we'll take a break right here. Luckily, Dr. Zach Guido, our UA climate scientist, is in the green room, and we will not have to rely on our live line today. We'll be right back.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the DoubleTree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Helping you make better money decisions is what The Ramsey Show is all about. Today at 1 p.m. on 1030 The Voice.
Welcome back. It is The Buckmaster Show, a Tuesday, the first Tuesday in August. This portion of the program in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, presented by Green Things, 3384 East River Road. All the rain, and there has been some good rain over by Green Things. The plants are very happy. It's a great time of year to do some planting, put some color in the garden, a beautiful 13-acre site of Green Things, also home to Zocalo Village and all that great merchandise from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. Come tour the five shops at Zocalo Village. The websites are greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's welcome now Dr. Zach Guido, the Buckmaster Show contributor on climate. A good time for Dr. Guido to come in. It's kind of the mid-year Buckmaster 2022 monsoon report with Zach, who is the assistant and assistant research professor. He's not the only one at the Arizona Institutes for Resilience, known as AIR. That organization coordinates kind of interdisciplinary groups of faculty, students, and projects across the UA campus, from climate science to public policy, law, the arts, water resources, and beyond. Zach, how are you?
I'm doing well.
You know, I was going to start by saying it's a weird monsoon season, but I guess you could say that every monsoon is weird in its own peculiarities.
Absolutely. That's the beauty of it. I mean, last year at this time, it was the historically wet July.
Over 9 inches at this time at the airport.
Yeah. So each year, each season, even each 2 week period sort of has its own flavors. And I think that's what makes the monsoon such a spectacle and worth talking about. And there's never a dull moment. Of course, unless you get like those years where it just doesn't rain at all, and then you get angry and surly.
Like the year 2020.
That's right.
So monsoon mostly ho-hum was the headline in the Arizona Daily Star. That article also had some interesting storm totals around the Tucson Valley. And basically, to summarize, it's anywhere from less than an inch, Zach, in the Oro Valley area to well over 6 inches out by Sabino Canyon. And Mount Lemmon's had even a lot more than that up on the mountain. So I know where we are in the central foothill, lower central foothills, our very unscientific rain gauge for July would put it at about 4 inches, is what I'm saying. We had three inches just this weekend.
Yeah,
a big storm event in the foothills on Sunday, but we'd also had a couple of rains earlier in July. So my guess, we're at about 4 inches in our area.
Yeah, there's quite a bit. I mean, you bring up a really important point, and that is that there is quite a bit of spatial variability of rainfall across Tucson, across small scales, but even across the monsoon region. You know, more broadly, Phoenix has experienced quite a bit of rainfall, or west of Phoenix. Flagstaff's above average. I'm not sure I would call it a ho-hum monsoon, and that's to your point earlier.
Yeah.
I mean, there has been some areas, particularly my house, which is below average, less than even at the airport, which is, you know, just received for July. Just over an inch.
1.08 inches at the airport. Certainly that is one of the dry spots.
Yeah.
Right there on the bottom.
It is. But I think we have to go back and remember that the monsoon, actually, by the old way that we used to define the start of the monsoon, which was for here in Tucson, it was three consecutive days of dew point temperatures above 54 degrees Fahrenheit, which is more or less a measure of the water in the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
Using that criteria, and they switched it you know, 10, 11, 12 years ago, a while now, just simply to be able to more effectively communicate. But it's now sort of a fixed date at July 15th. June 15th. Everybody knows that. But if we use that old definition, the monsoon actually began seventh earliest on record. So it began with a week, maybe a little bit more here in Tucson before the start of July, and mm-hmm. we sort of had this favorable condition for monsoon moisture to waft in the region. And by and large, it's persisted throughout, you know, July. And, you know, some places, you know, it just hasn't had the luck of receiving that convective storm cell. And there's been some weird things going on with, like, the winds haven't been favorable to blow storms that are forming over the mountains into the lower deserts. But there's been quite a bit of rainfall in a number of places. Like, looking at a map, you know, southeastern Arizona has received above average rainfall. All around Phoenix, the sort of southern and western part of Phoenix, like the Four Corners region, the Mogollon Rim, basically the western half of New Mexico.
They've gotten a ton of rain.
Yeah, and, you know, really, like, parts of Tucson, looking at this map, is really sort of the spot that it's been, you know, below average, and it's the bullseye seems to be right over my house.
Yeah, and we talked the last time you were here, the forecasting had been that this corner, this kind of southeast corner of Arizona, was going to have, the odds were that we were predicted to have a pretty robust monsoon season.
Yeah, that is true. And there was also, I think, before I came on, it was before June 15th, and the indications were for an early onset.
Yes, and that happened.
That did play out, and for a robust sort of beginning to the monsoon, which normally follows from an early onset.
It's been a cooler. I mean, the temperatures, it was, what do they say, the seventh warmest July on record. However, it feels like the last couple of weeks we've had pretty pleasant temperatures.
Yeah, I was actually surprised at that statistic as well. And, you know, normally when there's a relationship between rain and temperature, so when you do have, you know, widespread events or just consistent rain, you obviously have clouds, and that sort of tamps down the high temperatures. And so you can get a below average, if you will, or conditions that feel like they're below average when you have rain, and then the converse happens. But yeah, you know, the temperature signal, I mean, if people want to make wagers on what it's going to mm-hmm. be, always bet on the above. You know, I mean, it's just, this is the climate change signal. I mean, every single year is above its long-term average. The nighttime temperatures in particular this
very
year.
Very warm.
Very warm. So, I mean, that story to me is about as uninteresting as it gets now, just because... Mm-hmm. We say it every single year. We say it every single month, without end. So, and I don't expect that to change.
Reflecting back to the summer, well, July, where we had all that rain. I mean, it was at this point over 9 inches out at the airport at the end of July. When you think about, well, what was different last year? Obviously, there was more rain, but Zach, there were more daytime, all day events with very good coverage over the whole valley last July.
Yeah, and so last year, I mean, if you remember, and I'm racking my memory right now, but there was just a couple of events, like really interesting events, where you had this sort of cutoff low, sort of easter coming from the east that sort of meandered around.
Traditional wind pattern. It was a different setup.
Yeah, and it produced, I mean, it was drawing, it created the atmospheric instability. It was a atmospheric feature that created the instability that allowed all of the moisture that was around to rise and fall out in rain. And, you know, during the monsoon, you have a couple of these mechanisms, right? You have, like, solar heating that can really drive up the temperatures near the surface, that causes convection, moves that moist air. So you have to have moisture, moves that moist air upwards, and temperatures decrease as you move up in the atmosphere, and all that rain sort of squeezes out. So you get that convectively driven a rainfall. But you can also have these features that move in that create like sort of upper level or mid level conditions that favor uplift as well. And so we often talk about these easterly waves that move in, and basically in the monsoon season, we're moving the sort of the position of the high pressure ridge north, so that we're no longer under the westerlies, which is what we typically are under during the year, but we actually get weather then moving in from the east. So that position of the ridge sort of helps steer in features from the east that can create that dynamic instability, and that's what happened in those two major events that you're referencing. I mean, I think they dropped like 2 inches of rain in the airport or close to it. And so a lot of our rainfall in July came from those two events. And you're right, we have not had that. We have not had that this year. To your question about what's different, there was a little bit more moisture around last year than there is this year, but there's still a lot of moisture around. Like, we haven't had like long protracted periods of drying out, which we often get, and we'll probably get later on in the season. But really, I think it has to do with the other conditions, like the steering flow or the wind profile as you move up in the atmosphere, which you know, it's really sort of complicated. If it's not doing the right thing, you can actually have the wind blow the tops of the storms in the direction that the storms are moving, and the tops sort of like fall over, not fall over, but they shade the ground, and that shading in the path of the storm sort of shuts off that convective pump. And so the position of the winds and the strength of the winds really kind of matter of whether or not you're going to have widespread rainfall or a storm point. Over the mountains.
Good point. You know, thinking of those clouds, we've all seen them. I love the clouds, the big cumulus clouds, but you'll see where it's like an anvil.
Exactly.
An anvil where it's like a plateau. And you're saying that shading in advance of the storms can cut down rainfall.
Yeah, if the storm is moving in sort of, let's say it's moving north, or let's say it's moving west, and also the tops of the storms are being blowed faster to the west.
Yes.
Then that acts as a shading mechanism and sort of can suppress the amount of convection that's going on. But if it's blowing the other way. You know, so you can have wind flow can be different depending on where you are in the atmosphere.
And one more thought before we take a break. If the storms had gone a little bit to the east, a little bit to the west, maybe they had parked more over the airport, it would be a completely different picture when historians look at July of 2022.
Yeah, and I hope, and we try to do this, I hope they don't pin their interpretations on one rainfall gauge.
There need to be multiple gauges, maybe at DM, maybe one in the foothills up in Oro Valley, and then take the average. But that seems too simple. We got to take a break right here. Zach Guido with this University of Arizona climate scientist. Buckmaster Show on a Tuesday continues.
Nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the DoubleTree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. UA climate scientist Dr. Zach Guido is with us. We're talking about Southwest Arizona, New Mexico rainfall. And I know over in Silver City, one of our great sponsors, Zach, our friends over there told me that there was a time there in June, I think it was the wettest, one of the wettest Junes they've ever had over in western New Mexico.
Late June. Yep. I think that there was a big event that came through there.
So they're getting a ton of rain, and what that means, Zach, is it's a great time of year. The temperatures are very moderate right now, and the greening of the Gila National Wilderness is a great time to go over there to visit. Start your planning by going to southwestnewmexico.org. There's all sorts of great ideas to tempt you for a trip over there. It's only about a three-hour drive from Tucson, and there's great places to stay as well. Again, southwestnewmexico.org. So we continue now with our climate scientist, Dr. Zach Guido. One of your colleagues at the University of Arizona, Beth Tellman, co-founder of the flood database Cloud to Street. She's an assistant professor of geography at the UA. Had an interesting story that she participated in on CNN about the catastrophic flooding in Kentucky, and at the same time you've got another giant forest fire event in California, and how these events are related to climate change.
Yeah, boy, the news from Kentucky and the fires are—it's hard to watch. Yeah, and the climate change signal here or story here is really one about, you know, extreme events and, you know, floods and fires and heat waves. These are complex hazards that, you know, involve, you know, things like for fires like land management and climate and where people live and ignitions. And obviously, you know, the story is one where you know, changing of the climate is influencing the severity of these events. It's no doubt for fire that, you know, you have drier, hotter times, you're going to have conditions that are more ripe for fire. It's not the only driver of fires. Again, it's where people live. It's like our land management history.
Thinning of the forest.
Of the forest, or just like, you know, letting the forest burn naturally. I mean, fire management itself has gone through a lot of changes in the last, you know, 20, 30 years as we recognize the importance of natural fires on landscape. But, you know, the theory behind the climate change, you know, on the wet side of things is for every degree Celsius you raise the temperature, the atmosphere can actually physically hold more moisture. So when it rains, if there's more water up there, it's going to rain harder. And, you know, that bears out in a lot of places. And that's like, you know, based on physics, and it's a pretty robust conclusion. And, you know, on the dry side of things, when you have conditions or periods that just, let's say, naturally lack rain, but it's warmer, your landscape is drier. And that's what's happening here in the Southwest in late winter or early spring, for instance, where our temperatures are going up. And it takes less time to dry out the landscape. So, and that sort of primes the conditions for, you know, increasing fire risk. Again, I think it's like really important to say that there's a whole bunch of variables, human and environmental, that are part of these hazards that unfold. And climate is one of them. And it can be a very important one at certain times.
All right. Circling back to our monsoon 2022, we really aren't at the halfway point here. I kind of mistakenly said we're at the halfway report card. But this, if you look at June 15th and the season will go to September 30th, we have two full months left. And then you talk about variables, Dr. Guido. You've got as we get in now to the end of August into September, it then becomes hurricane season. I mean, it's hurricane season right now in the tropics and the Baja, but the season shifts more into an easterly, closer to the Mexican mainland, and that can produce and has big rain for us.
Yeah, so I think of the monsoon sort of in these two periods, like July and August. Generally, let's take Tucson Airport as an example. They generally experience about the same amount of rainfall on average, and the mechanisms are similar. And then in September, it's more variable, and we're influenced at times by these decaying tropical storms that start in the eastern Pacific, but sort of can meander their way or be driven into the southwest, moving west. And as I mentioned before, where the monsoon ridge is really important for whether or not we're under the easterly or the westerlies. In September, that ridge is sort of settling back down. It's moving south. And those tropical storms, as they move north, they get then entrained into the westerlies, and then they're directed back toward us. And so they don't always happen, but we can get one or two events that are decaying or remnant tropical storm kinds of precipitation events, and that can really change the total. So we get less rainfall on average in September and about the same in July and August. And yeah, we still got a long way to go. We still have a long way to go. So for those of you like at my house that are below average, like I'm optimistic about August. In fact, the projections from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration call for above average conditions for August, rainfall conditions for August. So fingers crossed.
All right. We'll see what happens. And of course, the tail of the tape is what we'll be looking at the next time we have Dr. Guido on the show. We'll try to set up something with Zach for kind of the end of the season, end of September, to get his update. Zach, thanks.
Thank you.
All right. On behalf of Dr. Zach Guido and John Engineering and Producing, John, very frustrating day for John with the phones not working. And so it's kind of a mystery what happened to the phones, and we apologize. Terry Bracey's monthly report was not heard today. We couldn't get Terry on the line, but I guess that's what happens in live radio sometimes. Anyway, that'll do it for today's show. We've got more coming up right after CBS Network News. Mr. Ramsey with his very popular show on money. Bill Buckmaster saying, have a great afternoon.